Hello, my name is Wendy Liebman, and I'm the CEO and Chief Shopper of WSL Strategic Retail, and this is Future Shop. This is where I chat with guests about the future of retail, not just looking through a crystal ball future of retail, but what retail needs to look like in the future and, you know, what the heck to do about it. So not just blue sky, but how we get on with it. You know, over the last few weeks, I've been thinking a lot about how companies need to think differently about how they engage with shoppers, not only coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, but as we move through this time of social, political, and economic turmoil. You know, one of the things that struck me over the last few weeks is how Americans as consumers, as shoppers, are now really challenging us all as they are trying to take control in very chaotic times. They are questioning why they should trust us as brands, as retailers, as businesses, as companies they work for. So as we think about that pragmatically, what does that mean to be a brand and a business that these shoppers feel passionate about, passionate to support, and businesses that they want to spend their hard-earned money on in these times of chaos? Coming up, you're going to hear a discussion about building trustworthy brands and companies, be they product brands, be they retailers, be they organizations. That's what we're going to talk about now. My guest today, I am delighted to say, is a good friend and great inspiration, Craig Dubitsky. He's the founder of Hello Products. That's that crazy oral care brand that made us all realize that cleaning our teeth is actually a happy, healthy, friendly, and joyous activity, not that sort of germy, deep cleaning, scary chore that some of those big toothpaste brands would have us believe. So I'm delighted to have him here. Hello, hello, welcome.
Hello. Hello, Wendy, and thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm delighted. I'm delighted. How are you? Where are you? Tell us, you know, the state of things.
I'm doing well, all things considered. I'm in lovely Montclair, New Jersey, 12 miles outside of Manhattan, and enjoying all things from the third floor of my house. How about you?
Yeah, same. Well, I'm between New Jersey, not that far. I will drive past you today, heading back into Manhattan, missing Manhattan, of course. So back and forth and safe and sound and happy to be wherever I happen to be at the moment. So no complaints at my end. You know, it's interesting. Doing this today took me back to December, which seems like a century ago, when you were kind enough to join us at our big business of Well Symposium in Manhattan. And we sat downtown at the World Financial Center and talked about all the opportunities emerging around health and wellness and how to innovate and disrupt around that. I know you hate that term, disrupt around that business. Yes. So it seems to me incredibly timely that here we are sitting in a health crisis to talk about your business, building brands. But actually, I want you to talk about something you don't often get to talk about, is not just reinventing an aisle or a category, but actually thinking about reinventing retail. So we'll get to that.
Okay.
But let's begin at the beginning, because not everybody, hard to believe, will know you. So let's talk a little bit about how you built Hello and the unique culture and business you've created, and, you know, what made you successful and why the heck you sold it to Colgate. No, we'll get to that.
Sure. Wow. Well, let's see. Something I'm trying to address the first part, which is like something you don't really get to talk about. So I don't really get to talk a lot about, and trust me, it's going to segue into the meatier part of the question. But there's something I don't really get to talk about that much. My built-in support system, you know, I'm the entrepreneur and I get to have, amazing moments like this. But, and I don't mean to sound cheesy, corny, fluffy, but honestly, without my wife and my family, there's no way I ever could have even embarked on an entrepreneurial journey, even though I was a little kid as an entrepreneur. I wouldn't have had this journey or this experience. So no one really talks about that so much. So I just wanted to layer that in there. My wife is unbelievable and I totally married up, and I hope everyone who is lucky enough to have someone else in their life as a partner feels like they also are with somebody who makes them better. So I have to throw that in there. The team at Hello is everything, just everything. And I can't say enough about them, though I'll try in the limited time we have, just how awesome they are. But the quick version of Hello and where and how this came to be is I am truly a lifelong entrepreneur. I'm hyper-visual. I love architecture and design and art. Everything to me is art, everything. And I don't put a price tag on art, though a lot of people tend to do that. I think art is visual and available and creatable by just about anybody, even though we all have limitations as to, you know, how skilled we may be. And my moment with Hello came when I was walking through a big chain drugstore on 6th Avenue and I think 26th Street in Manhattan. And I happened to walk by the oral care set. I didn't go in there with the intention of exploring the oral care set. It's just the oral care set kind of screamed at me as opposed to sing to me. And what was screaming at me were these visuals of extracted teeth. Everywhere I looked, there were these pictures of extracted teeth on the products. And some of them had holograms of extracted teeth. Some of them had beautiful artistic renditions of extracted teeth, you know, highly stylized with little, you know, concentric circles around them and things. And it really shocked me because I thought, isn't the whole point of this stuff so that the teeth stay in my mouth? Like, why are they showing me extracted teeth? I just thought it was really antithetical and just weird and scary to look at. And it just kind of hit me. And the other thing that hit me was, as I picked up product, everything in that whole category seemed to be driven by fear and shame. You know, if you weren't whitening, you were frightening. If you weren't killing or eliminating or destroying something, you know, it was going to end poorly for you at your next dental visit, which, by the way, you're probably 6 months overdue for anyway. And everything, again, just seemed very masculine and aggressive. And I thought, that's really kind of lame. And I thought, you know, there's no war waging in my mouth. The only thing I want to be able to do is be able to say hello to you when I see you, not be worried that I'm going to like blow you away with bad breath or my teeth are going to be the wrong color or the dentist is going to have a field day with me when I finally get my butt in the chair. So I thought, what's the friendliest word I could think of? And it was hello. And it just sort of hit me. I'm like, you know what? There's a need for something fun in this category. And fun isn't proxy for ineffective. I really thought we can make something really, really effective, but also make it fun. And the other big thing that was missing for me when I looked at these other products were the ingredients. They were filled with all sorts of things that I thought didn't belong in my mouth. And in fact, some ingredients that in other categories were already banned by large players in those categories. Things like, you know, saccharin being banned from diet sodas and triclosan being banned from hand soap. And all of a sudden these things, and alcohol, by the way, you know, all these ingredients I was seeing all over the place in oral care products. And I thought, that's the last thing I want to put in my mouth or my kid's mouth. So it was a combination of things. So what to call it and how to make the category truly friendly, because everything about it seemed unfriendly. So that's how it got started.
So, and then your wife said, "What? Are you nuts? You're taking on Colgate and Crest?" No.
I'm used to hearing that from her.
That's all right. And everybody else, no doubt, around. Yeah. So when you began that business, and as it grew, you talked about the people that you have around you, and you have created an incredibly unique culture of people. And I think about these times, and I think about, I interviewed Helena Foulkes, who you know, who was at CBS and Hudson's Bay Company, and she talked about things like, you can change a culture in a crisis. And I thought, Craig has a very unique culture. And is that the right culture for the crisis, or this is just the right culture for anything, big company, small company?
Oh, that's a great thought. Well, first of all, whenever there's crisis, I mean, it's obviously unfortunate and harrowing and forces you to take a deep breath and a giant step back and evaluate and reevaluate things. And quite often very, very quickly, not under the easiest of circumstances. Mm-hmm. That said, whenever there's a crisis or any kind of shakeup, any kind of volatility, because in my prior life, I was a trader and I and I traded a lot of things, including volatility. There's always opportunity, always, always, always. So it does typically present a great opportunity if you're up for it to change some things.
So how does the culture at Hello actually enable you to adapt to that current volatility?
It was always based on things that now seem very in vogue, right? It was like, I never even wanted titles at Hello. That came a little later, unfortunately. Even then, our titles are kind of fun and funky, right? So you're like the friendly supply chain manager. Mm-hmm. Like nothing is really too overly corporate at Hello, but I never even wanted titles because I thought that would create artificial strata and sort of these lines and barriers and silos that I thought were really kind of antithetical to productivity, frankly. Because I subscribe to this notion that good ideas can happen anywhere, that no one has sole dominion over good ideas. And if someone in supply chain has a really, really brilliant idea for creative, why would we ever say, no, we don't want to hear that? And if someone on the creative side has a really great idea for finance, believe it or not, it can happen. Why wouldn't we do that? And by the way, our finance guy cracks me up on the daily. Like, why wouldn't we get some fun ideas from him for creative? Like, it's just like breaking down the barriers. And the company, the premise of the company is around friendliness and being naturally friendly. That's not a contrivance. It's been in there since day one. And that's why we have literally, there's a Skype button on our website. I always wanted to be reachable, not because it's about me, it's about other people. If they want to talk to us, we should be able and willing to talk to them any way they want to. If they email, great. If they Skype us, great. I give out my cell phone number all the time, 917-392-1000. Anybody wants to call me or text me or FaceTime me, you can do any of those things. And I think that truly is the culture of Hello, that things aren't off limits. That's not the way we do it here. I like to say there are no layers and no legacy that get in the way. So it's been really lovely to unleash people. And I think to transition from that part of Hello to some of my new Colgate stuff, can a large company, can an enterprise start to evolve their culture?
So can a large global company really evolve its culture? I mean, isn't it quite artificial?
I'm very new in this role, but I'd like to think that the short answer is yes, absolutely.
Well, that was where I was headed too, because it's as you move, and one of the things you said at our Well Symposium, you talked about being an intrapreneur versus an entrepreneur, and that we often think of entrepreneurs as those wild and crazy guys like you who develop these things because they're inspired, but that doesn't happen within big companies. So now that you've moved from, the friendly side to the other big side or something, however we say that more elegantly, what does that mean? What do you see there as the opportunity and what you can bring and this brand can bring to a large corporation in these times, in any time, but in these times?
I think it's less about what I can bring and what the enterprise is allowing me to bring. It's really fascinating to me, and I am so excited. So specific to Hello, I like to say we joined Colgate. I like to say people join Hello. They don't transact and buy Hello. They join us as a brand, and I feel like we also joined Colgate. It's a really cool partnership. The really exciting part for us was they operate in over 200 countries around the world. So for us, the big idea was to make the products as friendly as we can make them, meaning thoughtfully sourced, delicious, highly effective, and affordable to everybody. Like to say we're for the 100% and not for the 1%. So to be with the biggest player in oral care in the world that is also the most penetrated brand in the world, I didn't know this till, fairly recently, but Colgate is the single most penetrated brand on the planet. Mm-hmm. Over 60% of households around the world have Colgate. The next nearest player is 40.
Yeah, I grew up on Colgate. So when I came to live in America, it was very odd. And I didn't know what, for example, excuse the expression, Crest was. I had no idea. That wasn't, the brand we grew up with, either cleaning our teeth or washing our hands.
Right. So for us, it was like, wow, we get to partner with Colgate. Mm-hmm. And Colgate said, and one of the many reasons why I love the people at Colgate is they recognized that we did have this unique culture, and they said, we want to learn from you. We don't want to mess with anything. Mm-hmm. Keep doing what you're doing. Anything we have where we can be helpful, you got it. And other than that, like, we're going to leave you be. We want to learn from you. And I didn't really know until very late in discussions with them that I would have this other role inside of Colgate. So
what is that role, that title, non-title?
I'm the chief innovation strategist for Colgate. So basically, I'm helping them think about a lot of different things in a lot of different ways, from you know, a cultural perspective, from a brand perspective, from a design perspective. And overly corporate or overly ambitious. I'm so in love with the people there, and the fact that they are giving me an opportunity to share some of the things I've learned with them, because they have some incredible brands. And as good as the brands are, the people are just unbelievable. So to be able to unleash them, that's what I view this gig as. Like, mm-hmm. I'm there to help them tap into the entrepreneurship that exists there that may not have a ready outlet to bring it forth into the world. So I'm going to help with that.
Now, is it right that within this short moment, you worked with this product called Safe Hands?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes, yes, yes. So makes me like I'm blushing. I'm wearing a red shirt and I'm like looking in the camera picture and I'm like, my cheeks are kind of matching my shirt. So I'm still very, very new in the world of Colgate, and COVID had just started, you know, to show up in different parts of the world. And it was still very early days in terms of its arrival here in the US. And I thought, you know, soap supposedly really helps contain any kind of virus. You know, washing of your hands is really, really important. And I very sort of demurely wrote an email saying, you know, I believe Colgate's the largest liquid hand soap manufacturer in the world, and one of the biggest soap companies in the world, and it's doing business all over the world, and stores are going to be closing, and people are having a hard time, and in keeping with what I understand the culture, the purpose of Colgate to be, wouldn't it be amazing if we brought soap to the world in a new sort of way and gave it away? And wouldn't that be really great? And I think I worded it, you know, a little more eloquently than that, but that was kind of this germ of an idea. Like, wouldn't that be great? And I just sort of put it out there very gently. I just sort of wanted to posit it, and I didn't expect really anything. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I was very, very new. And long story short, I got an email back very quickly with a handful of really incredible people copied on it, and boom, like meeting started. And there were just a handful of people that were in this working group. And we basically worked nonstop for, you know, I don't know, maybe 10 days nonstop. I mean, like really nonstop. And we came up with this product. And I have it on my desk. I'm showing mm-hmm. you on the screen.
Yeah.
It's called Safe Hands.
Safe Hands.
And hashtag Safe Hands. And basically partnered with the World Health Organization and gave away 25 million bars of soap to people in the most dire of need and first responders. Mm-hmm. And stamped into every soap is a little message also. And they're all different. Everything from thanks to 40 seconds, just lots of little things, little affirmations, and just, you know, like moments of gratitude because thoughtfulness, because obviously this is an incredibly hard time. But the fact that the company was able to do this and do it all over the world and do it at scale as quickly. I mean, and apart from the 25 million bars of soap, there was $20 million worth of cleaning equipment and you know, product and another, you know, large chunk of capital also donated and raised from Colgate people directly with a corporate match, which was just beautiful. And it was the scale and pace that really was so heartening.
Well, I think that's one of the things that we've learned in these discussions. Helena brought it up again in our discussion about the speed at which companies have been able to respond, mm-hmm. that we shouldn't assume because it's big. In fact, in some ways, that's an advantage because of the scale, but the ability as one of the great learnings from much of this crisis.
It's so great. It's like when you're a small company, I think that like you were describing, there's this fallacy that the little company, you know, like it's a dirty little secret that the little company wishes they were the big company. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, the big company wishes they were, you know, as nimble and agile as the little company. But if you can bring a lot of spirit to a big company, the assets, and I mean people, really, it's all about people. Mm-hmm. Those assets, forget about the scale. You wouldn't have the scale if you didn't have the people. So it's having the right people and the right spirit and the right attitude. And I think it was Lou Gerstner who said, the elephant can dance. I think that's where that line comes from. And it's great. And to watch Colgate like really be light on its toes and make this happen so quickly, It was beautiful.
It's a great inspiration, and it does talk to opportunity and the silver linings that come out of these things. So I don't know that anybody's actually asked you about how do you look at retail, but the fact that you walked down an aisle and saw an opportunity, if you now step back with your view of the world, your unique visual, artistic, inspirational, architectural view of the world, how do you think about retail today? Because if anything feels like it needs to be delightfully disrupted, and that's an inside joke, guys, it feels like that, the experience at retail. So tell me what you think about that and what you think should be done about that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's clearly been on this path of change for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a lot of pushback from retail when e-tail started becoming interesting. Mm-hmm. And now it's been embraced. The idea that you were going to order online and pick up in store. Oh, people won't do that. I don't understand. There's e-commerce. It's like e-commerce on its own. It's very expensive to ship things. Part of the magic of retail is the consolidation of shipment and the consolidation as a shopper being able to do more in store. So combining all these things is actually pretty magical. And I keep going back to product. Like retail is also a product, and that product typically is an experience. So it goes back to heightening the experience. Even when I look at most websites, this is going to sound really bad, and I don't mean it to sound bad. I mean this as a fan of retail, but I feel like the user interface, the user experience is still pretty much like DOS or like Windows 2.0. It is so early yet, and the bar is so low. I mean, what are some of the magical moments of e-commerce now that people know that the shopping cart is, you know, typically on the top right corner, and that the homepage access is in the top left corner? Like these are the rules of engagement. And there's like, you can scroll all the way to the bottom and learn more. Maybe there's like the bar is just so low for what the experience could and should feel like online. And I think some of the magic of how you could replicate what is so popular online in store is also an amazing area of opportunity. And I've only watched a few people kind of bridge all these things. I've watched, you know, Amazon play with that and put actual comments. You know, you're reading customer reviews, and the number one search engine for product is Amazon, right? So you could be in a Target or a Walmart, and people are reading reviews on Amazon. Bringing reviews to life in store would be amazing. And I've only really seen Amazon as one of the only players to do that in the handful of Amazon stores that are out there. So I think things like that tend to humanize the experience.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about humanizing the experience, Craig, because you remember when you participated in our Big Business of Well symposium in December, Dawn Clark from Nordstrom talked about creating a more human store when they designed their new Manhattan store. And that was a unique kind of messaging in all of that.
And it doesn't even matter what the category is. I've been in, you know, maternity stores and baby stores, and you'll see two expectant moms, first-time moms, and they will talk like they've known each other for 20 years because there's this unique shared experience, and who you trust has changed dramatically. So now you'll trust complete strangers who will post a review. You have no idea who they are. It doesn't matter. It used to be you trusted the retailer. Oh, I got it there. If it's not good, I'll bring it back. Mm-hmm. Now you trust a complete stranger. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because trust like that has changed all over the place. Now you'll trust a complete stranger and get in the back of their car, or a couple of months ago you would. Now, you know, we'll see. But
not just now, Craig. I mean, a decade ago in our How America Shops research, one of the big insights we saw was that people trusted what we call friends and strangers more than they trusted institutions or companies or big brands or retailers. I mean, this was a decade ago. And that's why I guess we're called retail futurists. But that was already emerging. So anyway, sorry to interrupt. Continue.
So the idea that the retailer is just going to put stuff on the shelf and merchandise it the right way, like that's not enough. And I think the other thing that's really important is the stuff itself. And I keep focusing on the stuff because a lot of times it is about story or merchandising, but tell me about or how quickly you're going to get it. Oh, I'm going to get it curbside. Oh, I'm going to get it because a third party is going to go in the store and shop for it and bring it to me. It's all about like how quickly can I get it? Oh, we can deliver same day. We can do an hour. You can book your window. And I think at the end of the day, I don't care about how I got it. I care about what I got. And I want to have a better experience with how I got it, not just it showed up when I clicked. Like, what did I get?
That is so rich and so packed with so much insight. Is there a place you have shopped in the world, digital, physical, local, down the street, that you feel gets this?
Well, I will say that I think a lot of the bigger players are really getting it right. And I think a big part of it is they know their audience really well. So I've had really great experiences recently, and I'll go down a list, and this is in no particular order. I've had great experiences with Costco. I've had great experiences with Walmart, great experience with Target, great experience with Whole Foods. And I've had, over many, many years, I've had incredible experiences even now with Trader Joe's, because it's retail theater there. It's like every time you're in there, it's a moment of discovery. Same with Costco. I mean, we've all talked about Treasure Hunt before, but I think they really get their shopper so well, and they're so focused on getting it right, whether the right is price, you know, there's a value equation, whether the right is design, whether the right is just making you feel special when you walk in the door because a human being says hello to you, or what the people that work in that shop are taught about how to express themselves. Those little touches that humanize things, I think, change everything. And yeah. I think the bar is really low. So when someone just does a little thing, it ends up having a huge impact.
Yeah, it also feels like at this moment in time, as we are all rethinking our lives, and that notion of trust and humanity seems to come to play in that a lot. So we could talk forever, of course, because now it's, you know, our time is running out as always.
Oh, no.
We can continue on. But, you know, what do you know now that you didn't know when you launched Hello?
How much time do we have? Would be a really, really, really long list. What do I know? Well, I always knew that things would take a while. And if I've learned anything, it's that everything basically takes a little longer than you ever hoped for. And I think part of the curse of being a passionate entrepreneurial person versus an entrepreneur, just an entrepreneurial person, always looking for new ideas, you tend to see things with immediacy, and not everybody else does, frankly. And some of those people may be your own people on your own team who you partner with. So it's very, very tricky. So what I've learned more than anything is everything takes more time than you think. And also you have to let people bring their magic to things. And I think that's really important. And as much as I thought I knew that before, or it was conjecture and it sounded good, I know it more than ever. Part of the magic of starting something or working within a big company is making sure you can have insanely happy, passionate people. And usually what gets people really happy and excited is they're bringing their own ideas and touch to things. So a big thing I didn't think that much about beforehand that I think a lot about now is how do you get out of the way the right way, so people can really shine, but still make sure that you're keeping the integrity of the idea, the concept, the vision, the mission, the look, feel, vibe of what got you so excited in the first place, and making sure that's extensible and extendable. And so other people can own that too. And that I didn't really think about beforehand, because, you know, when you think of something and you're, you know, one person in a room by yourself, you're not thinking about that. But now that we've grown and now that we're part of a bigger company, it's how do you infect other people, to use a term which is a scary term in COVID times. But how do you sort of create a positive contagion and make sure it gets better with each person that it touches?
Well, I'll tell you, and thank you for that. One of my fond memories of you is bumping into you in the lobby at Target headquarters in Minneapolis, and there was some of your team, and you popped up, and somebody said, "Oh, there's somebody over there," and you turned around and, like a sort of a bunny rabbit, went bouncing off to on the mission of engaging with that senior Target executive, and then came bouncing back, and everybody was so excited, first of all, that they sent you on a mission without giving you much direction, and you knew exactly what your job was, and you came bouncing back, and they were just so happy and joyous. Oh. The team was so happy and joyous, but it was also your responsiveness to, you know, your role. So I think a lot about Hello as a culture, and I'm excited to see what that will look like as you make safe hands, happy hands at the Colgate Company worldwide.
Oh, so, thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited. I feel very, very, very lucky every day, really. Yeah.
No, so many things we could talk about, but I think you've captured a lot of it right here today. So I thank you as always. It's a pleasure to see you.
Thank you. Great to be seen. And while I have you in front of maybe a live audience somewhere, I have to say a major thank you to you, because you're one of the very first people I met when I started on the CPG journey a long, long, long time ago. Talking about things like method, even before there was an EOS, and talking about all this stuff. So I can't thank you enough. You play such an important role in my life, personally and professionally, and I know you do in the lives of so many others. So I just want to say thank you.
So here's the thing. What we've learned from Craig are some really important guidelines for the future. First, we've learned that in time of volatility, there's always opportunity. That said, you need to have a culture that can adapt to it and embrace it. Secondly, you know, he talked about part of this is unleashing the talent you have in the room. And I will say that, you know, that opportunity to unleash the entrepreneurship that's already there, whether you're in a big company or a small company, is really important. That's not relegated just to a small company. And how do you do that in a way that creates a positive contagion so that it spreads throughout the organization, excuse the bad pun, but so you really build that kind of unleashing of the talent that you have in the room. The other thing that's really important is, you know, we've all been cowed by e-commerce, this conversation about Amazon that just roils our day-to-day lives. But that this conversation we had today is really that the user experience leaves so much to be desired. And we say this a lot. We see it a lot in our How America Shops research, that in some ways, buying online is very operational. And as Craig said, it's like DOS. It's like Mac 2.0. It's in an old world, and there is a huge opportunity for retail at large to understand that and change the overall experience as we operate in an omni-channel world today. There's also the opportunity that, you know, retail is not just about how I got it, but what I got. And that reminded me of some work we did that we call Build My Magic Box a number of years ago. And that's what a shopper said, build my magic box. And a shopper said, when I get a crush on a brand, it owns me. It owns me. It is that opportunity, not just to think about how did I deliver it to them, but what is the it that I'm delivering? And that becomes hugely important. You know, this notion of not having the aisle screaming at me, but having it singing to me as a shopper. So ultimately, in the end, the thing to remember is that we are at a moment where we have to build trust again, rebuild trust. It's an imperative within your organizations, with shoppers, especially in these times. And that's the most important thing we can deliver today. So that's the thing. And last but not least, thank you for being with us today. There's much more of this content at our website, www.wslstrategicretail.com. You can share our latest How America Shops insights, our latest report on the evolution coming out of the crisis. You can sign up for our new What's Up at WSL and just immerse yourself in all things shopper. Thanks for joining me. Cheers for now. Just a reminder, the content of this podcast is the product of WSL Strategic Retail. You can't reproduce it or repurpose it without asking us, without written consent. So don't forget that. Copyright WSL Marketing Inc. 2020. Thanks for listening. Really enjoyed the chat. Please join us next time. See you around.